All right, tonight we deal with a question which is, by definition, applies to each and every one of us. And a question that we've all in our minds have thought about at one time or another, which is, does every parent deserve honor? And specifically, does my parent deserve honor? Questions like that have come up, and we're going to explore that tonight. Why? Because Parshas Yitro, and of course has the Aseret Dibrot, and of course the verse of Kabed Avicha V'Imecha, honor your mother and your father. Okay, we'll get into that. And but we're going to start with, as we like to, the video. And tonight we start from a current Fox production of The Resident. Okay. And I'm gonna set up the scene here. Basically, this is a, you know, like all these series, this is a in the category of a medical drama, you know, vehicle. Okay, and the person that we're dealing with is a young resident named Dr. A.J. Austin. Okay, and I'm setting up the scene, and he's going to speak with his adopted parents, the parents who raised him, okay? And then, of course, we'll take it from there. So without further ado, let us get into the video. And here we go. All right, so he's going to visit mom and dad, and his father runs a restaurant. Okay, here we go. Let's back it up a little bit.
What did the fish say when he swam into the wall? Damn! Help your old man out, son. Give that a laugh just once.
I could, but it would be fake, Dad.
But in my heart, I would receive it as real.
Yi, look at him. Something is not right.
I know. My Kung Pao shrimp has made grown men weep, and he hasn't touched a bite.
All right, come clean, son. Did you get a girl pregnant?
I fed my birth parents.
How? The records were closed. They didn't tell us anything about who they were.
If we'd have known, we would have told you.
I know, but they came looking for me. At least my biological father did. Dude just showed up at the hospital.
Tell us everything. What was he like? No sense of humor like you?
Well, he's stubborn. He's melodramatic. And he's opinionated, so no, he's nothing like me.
Okay, that's the clip. Okay. All right, let's go to the sheet. Oh, is everybody seeing the sheet?
Yeah.
Yes. All right, let's ask some questions here. What event has caused the normally ultra-confident Dr. A.J. Austin to become so shaken?
Did he know who? Obviously, he knew he was adopted. So
knew he was adopted.
But it wasn't like he decided to search out his parents. Like, they searched him.
They sort of, you know, because again, as they said, his adopted parents, that they didn't know who it was because the records were sealed. So their identity was completely hidden.
So they just showed up randomly, yeah.
But the parent, the adopted, the birth father was curious about what happened to his son. Why did that cause the doctor to be so shaken? when you saw he walked into the restaurant and he's like simply like, you know, he's not eating his food. He's nervous. What's going on here?
Like, well, like if his life was like on that table, like his birth parents just came in and like flipped it upside down.
Why is that true? He's an adult. He has a job. He's a doctor.
It's still a shock. Well, he didn't have time to like mentally prepare, I guess. Or if like he had hired like a private eye to find his parents, he would have had time to prepare.
So why is that so shocking? I agree with everything you're saying, Scott. I'm just pushing you to go a little further, a little deeper. Why is that? I agree with you. Why is it so shocking?
Because he was kind of set in his life. It was comfortable, and then it just got like.
What was he comfortable about?
With his parents that he had.
Right. These are my parents, and essentially my birth parents essentially don't exist.
Right.
And now he has to deal with the reality, the shock, and then, you know, what kind of person are they? Now, okay, so let's go to question number two. Why would an adult child come to his parents with an emotional problem such as this? What support do Dr. Austin's parents give him? You all have parents, guys. This is not a mystery.
It's just, you know, he's going with them to get advice and counseling because that's where he always got it from growing up.
Is it purely they're seeking advice?
Advice, guidance, comfort, you know, just someone to listen.
All true. Anybody want to add to that? Okay, so Scott's correct. In other words, you know, the parent-child relationship evolves. You know, there's when the child's a baby and a toddler, and the child's in elementary school and middle school and high school, and then in, you know, college years, the young adult, and then the older adult child. But there's always a parent-child relationship, and it evolves. But basically, when a person gets hit with an emotional blow, it's perfectly normal, and I would say perfectly healthy, to go to speak to your parents to deal with that. That's a normal thing. A, to get counsel, and B, to get emotional support. He just got hit his whole life, as Scott pointed out, just been upended. And suddenly, there's a new parent figure showed up out of nowhere. That's devastating. Let me ask the next question. I want to hear from everybody, not just Scott. Is it appropriate for an adult to lean on his parents in this way? The two ways we're identifying is for advice, sage advice, and two, emotional support. What do you say? I'm going to go around the Zoom room here. Shmuel.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, life is a is an endless learning experience. So, yeah, you know, as new challenges, new complexities arrive, you will probably need to turn to your parents, even as you are in middle age.
Okay. Suzanne, what says you?
Yeah, I agree. Right. No matter how old you are, I don't have kids, but I think they see you as their kids. And not only is it normal, it's appropriate, but I think parents would expect that of their kids.
Okay, Erica, what do you say? What says you?
Well, I think our parents are our first teachers in life for everything. And I think even like through age, you gain wisdom. So I always feel like they know more through their experience, through their age. And I mean, I would like to think that they'd have our best interest in mind. So when things like this, so like heavy blows like this, or when something that like really that you don't really know how to, like, you know, you don't really know how to interpret it, how to exactly like cope with it, like you'd want to go with them because, like I said, you know that they have your best interest in mind. They're not gonna guide you wrong.
Ruthie?
I have no idea. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. We hear you.
So I definitely have no idea.
Okay. Shayna.
Yes, Rev, I barely heard the question. I apologize.
The question is that, is it appropriate for an adult child to go back to the parents to discuss issues of, you know, a big emotional problem or issue, and or advice, practical advice?
Yes, your parents are always going to be there for you, or should always be there for you, and you should always be someone that you know you can rely on as a source for wisdom and advice, whatever you're struggling with.
Good. Who's on the 848 number? I don't know. I don't recognize the number.
It's Julie.
Hey, Julie. Long time no see.
Hi. Yes. So I would say it's definitely appropriate. I do not believe it's a clear-cut situation, especially, at least in my case, being a Bali Tshuva. I do believe your parents at the end of the day are there for you. But I think it depends on what the matter is that you have going on and figuring out a way to approach them.
But now, is that so? Basically, pretty much everybody's given universally a thumbs up that it's appropriate as an adult child to go to mom and dad, discuss a significant emotional issue, or to gain practical wisdom and advice. Is that in our culture viewed upon as a good thing or a norm?
Yeah. What do you say? Definitely.
In our religious culture or in
America,
American society?
Good old US of A.
No, probably not.
What is the attitude instead?
Parents are old and stupid and don't know anything about the modern world.
Right. Also, if you're a mature adult, you know, whereas America has the philosophy of what they call radical individualism, which means that you should be completely independent, autonomous. Take care of yourself. So there's a sense like it would be an act of being a baby to go back to mom and dad. Now, I'm happy to hear from everybody that you guys have not, drunken that Kool-Aid, because that's a wrong idea. And, as, you know, for all the reasons, you talk about, why would you turn away advice from people who have your best interest in mind, care deeply about you, want your success? And now, again, obviously, if it's not their area of expertise, then obviously you want to use your judgment. Just because they're your parents and just because they live a long time doesn't mean they know everything. I think Julie was bringing up an issue like, you know, if your parents are not observant and you lead an observant life, they may not, that may be an area that they're not necessarily equipped to guide you on. But a lot of other stuff, they'll always be equipped to guide you on. But in America, it's looked down upon that you rely upon anybody. But, the Torah does not endorse America's belief of radical individualism. You are an individual, and you got to help yourself, but you're also part of a community. Judaism is all about the community. And the community, everybody has to help each other. You know what I'm saying? We are strong as the weakest link. And you have to help out. Okay? All right. Let's keep on going. Now, let's go psychologically a little deeper. What two major issues regarding parents make this event to be so challenging for Dr. Austin?
don't know. I kind of feel for him that he's got, I mean, I don't watch this show, just in that tiny little clip. Yep. He seems to have these like loving adoptive parents that he probably wants to, you know, have the best relationship possible with, in my imagination, I guess. Right. And then he has these other parents that have been absent for so long.
We just lost you, Ruthie. We didn't hear the last point.
I'm done talking. I know the internet went out.
We didn't hear your. You were saying you're about to make your point that on one hand he has his loving relationship with adopted parents, and then we didn't hear you.
Then like these other people show up and probably have expectations of some kind of relationship or understanding from him, and like how does he balance that with like, you know, honoring what his adoptive parents did and maybe like trying to be nice to these new parents in some way.
Exactly. What else, anybody else want to add to that? Good points. What issues does the regarding parents in general make this issue very challenging?
Because it's like, who do you show more respect to, towards the parent who gave you life or the parent who helped raise you? And it becomes right. Like nature versus nurture kind of thing.
Right. So these parents are threatening. It's a threat. One is that, you know, who's you know, in other words, he's nervous that A, the relationship that he has might be undermined, like there's the new kid on the block, right? A. Mm-hmm. And B, it might threaten the other parents. He's also nervous that maybe his adopted parents might withdraw their love and affection because they're the biological parent is showing up. So that's why he's so shaken, because it's sort of this is what Scott said, is the metaphor of knocking the entire table upside down, because the relationship, one is that he's like threatened by, what am I have to do, you know, how does his whole, you know, my relationship with my parents, what does this do to it? And B, what does the relationship do to them? Maybe from, you know, there's me, well, you know, this impact on me and the impact of my parents. And maybe everything will not go well. Maybe things will be messed up. Maybe things will, it will end up being bad for me. Now, we saw, you know, he's on a limited clip, a rather healthy response. They didn't get, so what are the features, putting everything we said together, of a healthy relationship between parents and adult children? What are the features?
Communication, back and forth. Like talking.
All right. Honest communication, back and forth. A.
Respect,
yes.
Clear boundaries
is also that, right, which is very hard for parents. Which is more hard for parents than it is for kids, but it's hard for both, because as Suzanne was bringing up, because there's, remember, they see you, they can in their mind see you as the 8-year-old girl or the 8-year-old boy, and that never goes away. So the habit to relate to you as being a young person, much younger than you are, is always present. Okay, what else? Number one is unconditional love. The parent and the child should have unconditional love for each other. Two, therefore, concern of the well-being for each other. Three, to be able to, you know, to communicate the issues. And four, where things are, you know, the boundaries, where it's not appropriate to intervene, allow each person to have their own space, they should do so, okay? Now, here's a question that not everybody's going to, this is a little bit of an unusual question. What mitzvah or mitzvot do the parents of an adult child perform in maintaining this healthy relationship? I mean, giving advice, you know, providing emotional support. We know it's for the child, honoring the parent is keep it up, am. But what's the mitzvah from the parent to the child? Mm-hmm. What mitzvah? And I'll give you guys a hint. What famous mitzvah is it when a parent is involved in a healthy relationship with their adult child? What do you guys say?
You're granted a long life.
Well, that's a reward the Torah talks about if you honor your parents. But talking about the reverse, what mitzvah are the parents involved in when they have a good, healthy relationship with their child? Being emotional support, financial support, providing advice, caring about them, showing unconditional love, etc. What mitzvah are they involved in? I'm talking about the parent, not the child. We'll get to the child. It's a mitzvah that you all know. But it's just weird to think about in this way.
Loving your neighbor as yourself?
Loving your neighbor as yourself. We naturally think that v'hadrich kamocha, to love your fellow Jews yourself, somehow or another does not apply to the basic family unit. Not true. Mom and dad, brother, sister, son, daughter, they're all members of the Jewish people. So when mom, when the couple sits down with Dr. Austin to talk about his problems and be a supportive, helpful family, they're nurturing his emotional needs. That's the Hadrech Hamocha, love your fellow Jew as yourself. Just as you want your emotional needs to be taken care of, your sense of your emotional well-being, so too you want you have to do it for your fellow Jew. So the child is the fellow Jew to the parent. Even though it's not an abstract point, but we don't categorize, we somehow view our parents and our family as being somehow separate than the rest of the Jewish people. But they are also members of the Jewish people. All right.
Wait, Rabbi?
Yes.
Is there an age cap on to teach your children commandment?
Till the point that they, till a child becomes an independent learner.
So it wouldn't apply to this either.
No, this is not talking about education. This is,
right.
Providing advice and emotional support and your financial is not really part of the mitzvah of educating your child. That might be an additional mitzvah. Okay. All right. Let's continue on. I mean, there's also mitzvah of rebuke. Let's say an adult child acts improperly, and mom or dad, bring the child in privately to say that, look, the way that you handled, the holiday party with the whole family was very wrong. The mitzvah of rebuking your fellow Jew. It's another mitzvah. Also applies. All the mitzvahs that apply, being adam l'chaveru, between you and a fellow Jew, apply to to parents, to the child. Okay, we're only focusing on literally one pasuk in the entire parsha. But as you see, I had to cut out material because otherwise we'd be here all night. So it's a one mitzvah. It is one pasuk, but you got a whole lot of action going on there. So let's. All right. So Scott, read me the one pasuk.
The fifth commandment, 20:12, honor your father and mother. You will then live long on the land that God, your Lord, is giving you.
Exactly. All right. So, by the way, that doesn't mean necessarily that. So on the plain reading, is it talking to an individual? Who's the audience of that pasuk?
All members of the Jewish nation.
The Jewish people. Hashem is addressing the Jewish people in the Aseret Dibros, right? So, when they honor their parents, they as a nation will remain having sovereignty in their land. That's what the pasuk says, you know, directly. Okay. Additionally, there it suggests a long life, but we're going to get into that. Okay. But you know what I'm saying? It doesn't say that in the text. It means that the Jewish people will not be exiled. They will have sovereignty, which we'll get into that. All right, let's go on. Okay, now I'm going to introduce you to a new book tonight. New book for some. Let's have somebody read what this book is. Shmuel Balakasha.
Sefer HaHinuch, the Book of Education, is a work which systematically discusses the 613 commandments of the Torah. The underlying goal is to encourage every Jew to incorporate research of this system of mitzvot into their weekly study of the Parsha. It was published anonymously, in 13th century Spain. The work's enumeration of the commandments is based upon Maimonides' system of counting as per his Sefer HaMitzvot. Each is listed according to its appearance in the weekly Torah portion, and the work is structured correspondingly. It separately discusses each of the 613 commandments, both from a legal and a moral perspective.
Good. So we know the guy's name was Rav Aaron. We don't know his thing. And he wrote it actually for his son and his friends who were bar mitzvah. This was a bar mitzvah book to give a kid like a one-page general sense of the mitzvah. Okay, and they would learn that each mitzvah one page. So he says in the introduction, if I remember correctly, they won't spend their whole Shabbos outside playing ball. Some things don't change. He lived in Barcelona, Spain. Okay, very nice. All right, so we're going to taste. So by the way, if you're ever bored, and you want to read something which is short but impactful, just take out your phone. You go to safaria.org or download the app and has the entire Sefer HaChinuch in English for free. Okay? So let's read the mitzvah of honoring your parents. Now he has like three sections. It's a basic description of the mitzvah, you know, the psukim. Like what the pasuk is and what the mitzvah is either a positive commandment or a negative commandment. Then he gives the shrashei mitzvah, the root, what we might call the rationale of the mitzvah or possible rationale of the mitzvah. And then he goes into sort of like some of the halachic highlights. Okay, so it's like a little teaspoon of the mitzvah. I just copied for your edification what he calls the reasons or benefits or roots of the mitzvah. Let's have Erica. Can you read this? Can you see the sheet?
Yes.
Yeah, read it out. Mitzvah 33.
Honoring your parents. From the roots of this commandment is that it is fitting for a person to acknowledge and return kindness to people who are good to him, and not to be an ungrateful scoundrel, because that is a bad and repulsive attribute before God and a people. He should take to heart that the father and the mother are the cause of his being in the world, and hence it is truly fitting to honor them in every way and give them every benefit he can to them, because they brought him into the world and worked hard for him when he was little. Once he fixes this idea in his soul, he will move up from it to recognize the good of God, blessed be he, who is his cause and the cause of all his ancestors until the first man, Adam, and that he took him out into the world's air and fulfilled his needs every day and made his body strong and able to stand and gave him a mind that knows and learns. For without the mind that God granted him, he would be like a horse or mule who does not understand. And he should think at length about how very fitting it is to be careful in his worship of the blessed be he.
Okay. All right.
Rabbi, before you move on to the next thing, can I just ask you something about this text?
Yes.
So when I read this and when I listen to Erica read it, something that comes to me is it almost appears by that explanation that Cupid of Aim is actually something to a certain degree that is earned by the parent.
Shmuel, you are on point tonight.
Okay. Should I just be quiet?
I'm going to get into that.
Okay, I'll just wait then.
All right, let's move into it. We're getting there. That is the question. Okay. So the first step whenever you get a text is to be able to, be able to capture what its core message. So I'm going to ask the question. What are the two reasons being autumn of Cavero, all right, between man and his fellow? In other words, there are many ways you can categorize mitzvot, right? Right, there's positive commandments and negative commandments. Mitzvot that obligate you to do something, and mitzvot that obligate you to refrain from things, right? You're familiar with that? Mitzvot aseh, mitzvot lo taseh. That's one categorization of mitzvot. Another one, mitzvot bein adam l'chavero, bein adam l'makom. Mitzvot between you and your fellow Jew, or your fellow person, and you and God. Another way of organizing mitzvot, right? We also mentioned in class, mitzvot which are tikkun haguf, and mitzvot which are tikkun hanefesh. Things which are for a material benefit, either for you or the society, or tikkun hanefesh, which is or a benefit to your soul, either for you or your society. Okay, a lot of ways you can organize mitzvot. So, what according to the Sefer Chinuch are the two reasons for honoring your parents?
They bring you into this world, and they teach you how to live in it. No. Okay.
They bring you into this world. So why do you have to honor them?
Because without that coming together, you wouldn't exist.
Okay, one is because they gave you existence. Right? That's what you said, that's number one. But that's not it. Satan does not start off with that reason.
Because they were good to you. It's to acknowledge and return the kindness to them.
Right. We call in simple Hebrew, if you heard this phrase before, hakaras hatov, attitude of gratitude. Somebody does something good for you, you, of course, do good in return. He says, I like the way that he phrased it is, and you return kindness to people who are good to him, and not to be an ungrateful scoundrel. We have met many ungrateful scoundrels in our lives, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Because that is a bad and repulsive attribute before God and his people. So it's a mida, it's a character trait to develop in you. In order, if you have the character trait of showing gratitude, you will what? You will of course do a kibud av em. And because he brought you into existence. Now, what is the Bein Adam L'Mako, between you and God, reason for the mitzvah? He throws in another reason. So there's a third reason. Look at it carefully.
Hashem is the cause of him and all of his ancestors back to the first man.
And therefore...
Oh, that's the Bein Adam L'Makom. That's the reason.
So what benefit is he realizing?
That Hashem created him.
So he's recognizing Hashem as the creator. How does he recognize it? Because he knows that he had a father, and he had a father, father, mother, going back to the first man, and that first man was brought into being by God. So he's recognizing the causal chain back to the original creation, and therefore reckon God as a good creator. Okay, so that's that's not a practical benefit. That's not a quality of a, that's not a Bein Adam L'Makom, it's not a midos, good character thing. It is a recognizing a certain truth. What's the proof of your proof of creation? Well, I was created, and there's a causal flow coming back to the first man. And that came into being. at a certain point in time. Okay. Let's keep on going. What is the connection between Ben Adam L'Chaveiro and Ben Adam L'Makom rationales for honoring parents? Are they unrelated? What are the connections between two rationales? Between the rationales that we mentioned before of gratitude and seeing God and seeing parents as a creator, as your who brought you into existence, and the general principle of God as creator, the first creator.
God created them, so they created you, kind of thing.
Well, it's true. Like,
God passed down knowledge to them, and then they're passing now knowledge to you.
Right, so you're actually right. So he, in other words, that's an additional idea. Another part of the raising you, they also, part of that raising is the education. So you have the being out of, you have God as creator, creates all of humanity, including your parents. They bring you into being. You're grateful for being, you're grateful for having existence, and by raising you, then you have gratitude for that. Now we get into, now we start moving into Shmuel's question. What of Sefer Chinuch's rational applies only to birth parents?
The idea that they contributed to you by creating you and bringing you into this world.
Right. So one is that the idea of them as creators of you, A, and B, they reflect back to the creator of the universe. But what does not necessarily, okay, we'll get to that. Then what of the Sefer Chinuch's rational applies only to honoring adoptive parents?
The idea of teaching you how to be in this world?
Well, the aspect we're talking about being in the world really is having gratitude for those who take care of you, who do good to you.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They don't reflect the idea of creation at all because they did not create you.
Right.
So when you, the adoptive parents, in fact, it's only about Hakar Sato. It's only about recognizing the good and being grateful, showing gratitude to those who are good to you. Now, and here we get to your question, Shmuel. What of the Sefer Chinuch's rationales do not apply to honoring birth parents who gave up their child at birth? What rationale does not apply to parents, like AJ's parents, who gave up their child to adoption? Right. Now, you could argue there is a Hakar Satov of what? Of existence. That they did give you existence. So there's a Hakar, because the nature of a person is not to exist, right? You don't have to be. So that's that Hakar Satov. But the Hakar Satov of the heavy lifting of raising you and educating you and worrying about you and taking care of you, they didn't do. There's no gratitude to recognize because they didn't do anything. Right? So there's an aspect of the Kibbutz Avim, as at least the Sefer HaChinuch understands it, that would not apply to birth parents who give up their children to adoption.
What in the case of parents who look, not to be crass, but anyone can have sex and make a kid.
Yes.
It's not a magical, it's not a trick, you know, anyone can do it.
Yes.
What do we have to say for parents who make children, do not give them up to adoption, but effectively abandon them in their own home? who right. do nothing to raise them or teach them.
Right. Well, obviously, obviously, we're gonna go into more deeply, but obviously, that gets into a good question is the Sefer HaChinuch is giving reasons for the existence of the mitzvah. In other words, why is there a mitzvah called Kibbutz Avim? And he laid down at least three reasons, right? Obviously, to show there must be a mitzvah to have a vehicle to show gratitude. A, for existence, and of course, the harder lifting, because, you know, most parents don't have intent, I'm going to have a child, I'm having sex to have a child. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Some do, some don't. And, so they are de facto, there is a gratitude element that I exist. They may not have had an intent, it may not be a great action of their part, but I recognize I'm grateful to be alive. Without them, I would not be alive. Even if they're terrible parents, there are terrible parents, would the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim apply to them? Or better yet, let's ask a simple question. For the parent, AJ's parent, we're going to get into some of the mitzvahs, right? If his birth father comes in, and we'll learn that there's an obligation of showing a reverence, you know, to take care of him. If you ask, basic Kibbutz Avim is doing service activities for mom or dad. But let's say AJ's dad comes in, you know, the kitchen, and by the way, could you get me the Diet Coke out of the fridge? Assuming everybody's Jewish, is there a halachic obligation for AJ to get up from the couch, which we don't like to do, go into the kitchen and bring his birth father a Diet Coke? What do you say?
No.
I would think yes.
What says you, Suzanne?
Well, I'm thinking, why did they give him up? Don't we have to consider that? Was it?
Let's say they couldn't. I think most people give up children at birth because they were not in a position to raise a child.
Right. So I feel like that was probably a smart, good choice to make. I think he should get the.
I didn't say if he should as getting a nice thing. Is he halakhically obligated? Or put it one other way, if he brings him the Diet Coke as he fulfilled the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim, yes or no? I'm not letting you to weasel out there, Suzanne.
I am saying he does not, halakhically, he does not have to.
Okay, let's go on. Shana, what says you?
I say yes, he has to.
Ruthie, what says you?
Yeah, I think he has to.
Okay, Erica, what says you?
Yes, he has to.
Okay. Julie, what says you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Yes.
Okay, so there's a difference. I'm glad we had this point, because there's a difference between, this is the Sefer Chinuch, let's call it speculation of why there is a mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim, right? Pretty logical, right? But once you have that mitzvah established, whether, you know, these are the benefits of the mitzvah, okay? A mitzvah exists whether the benefits occur or don't occur. Legally, now there's an obligation that you must do service activities to your birth parent. Period. Whether they embody the Sefer HaChinuch sparkling, spectacular rationale or not, doesn't make a difference. They're your biological parents. We're going to go into a little more deeply. Okay? Let me throw out a more spicy question because I want to turn up the heat. Let's say your mother is married and she has an affair, and with this, with her lover, they have you.
Awkward.
Awkward. Okay? So you are the result, the child is the result of an adulterous relationship, which in halakha makes you a mamzer. Yay. Okay? Is that an obligation of kibud av v'em?
Yeah, because
you're still your parents.
Right, yeah.
You're still your parents.
It's no matter like the situation of how you came to be, you're still there. They're still your parents.
Still your parents. Okay, everybody agree?
Yes.
All right, that's a debate. Because it might be an issue that they may not be, since literally you're the evidence of their unworthiness of receiving honor. There was a debate among the Rishonim. The Rambam holds like Scott. They're your parents. We'll get into the Rambam a little more. You got to honor them no matter what. Other Rishonim disagree. Say they're not. This is an activity that shows that they're not. They may, yes, they are your parents, but they are not really recipients. They cannot. They're not honorable, as proven by the fact they had an affair and had you. Okay. And that would apply by other cases where parents are, what we call in Hebrew, a Russia. If a parent can be defined as a Russia, according to many Rishonim, there's no obligation of kibud av v'em. Okay? Now, precisely what point is a guy a Russia? These are a little tricky halakhic issues. But I just want, this is not halakha l'maisa, practical halakha, but just to show you sort of what do you call it? Picture. Let's go on. Let's take a little Rambam action here. Let's have Erica read Bavakashna.
Okay. Rambam, Laws of Rebels, Chapter 6, 1-3. Honoring one's father and mother is a positive commandment of great importance, as is in fearing one's father and mother. The Torah equates the honor and fear of one's parents with the honor and fear of God himself. Exodus 20:12 states, honor your father and your mother. And Proverbs 3:9 states, honor God from your wealth. Similarly, with regard to one's father and mother, Leviticus 19:13 states, a person must fear mother and father. And Deuteronomy 6:13 states, and you shall fear God, your Lord. Just as he commands you to honor and fear his great name, so too he commands us to honor and fear our parents.
Okay, so let's talk right there. This is huge. The Rambam says that there's an equation, obviously not the same level, but there's just as you're obligated to show honor and reverence to God or God's name, you have an obligation to show honor and reverence to parents. Isn't that idolatry? And what's going on there? I mean, God is God. What's going on here? All right, the time together is clicking down. So I'm going to share an idea. The Rambam holds, similar to the idea of the Sefer Achinuch, that showing honor to your parents essentially is a vehicle be able to see the Creator in your life. The idea of a Creator is a very abstract thing. Seeing your mom and dad. Not an abstract thing. You understand, even a very simple child understands, that if it wasn't for mom and dad, you would not be walking this earth. So the parent is sort of the prism, the vehicle, the platform in order to see the reality of your creation and by extension, the creation of the world. They function in an educational way. Okay? All right, I'm going to skip. Let's go to Halakha 3 because I want to get to some action here. Let's go to Erica.
Halakha 3. What is meant by fear and what is meant by honor? Fear is expressed by not standing in his place, not sitting in his place, not contradicting his words, nor offering an opinion that outweighs his. He should not call him by name, neither during his lifetime or after his death. Instead, he should say, my father and my master. If his father or his teacher had the same name as others, he should call those other people by a different name. It appears to me that one should be careful only with regard to this matter, with regard to a name that is unusual, which is not used frequently by people. With regard to the names which people are generally called, by contrast, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, and the like, one can call others by that name in any language and at any time outside his father's presence without thinking anything of the matter. What is meant by honoring them? One should bring them food and drink, clothe them, and cover them from their resources. If a father does not have financial resources and a son does, the son is compelled to sustain his father and his mother according to his capacity. He should bring him out and bring him home and serve him in all the ways one serves a teacher. Similarly, he should stand before him as one stands before a teacher.
Okay, here we go. The last six questions of the night. What are the rationales of Kibbutz Avim does the Rama mention, or which one does he not mention? He mentioned one concept, or he inferred one concept, but he doesn't mention another concept. Compared to the Sefer HaChinuch, comparing the Rambam to the Sefer HaChinuch insofar as their worldview about Kibbutz Avim. What does the Rambam mention which is similar to the Sefer HaChinuch, and what does he omit glaringly? What do you say, Shmuel?
I say I don't know.
Okay. Shana, what do you say, Shana?
He mentions them as creator, but not the. I don't think he mentions the first part about returning kindness for kindness.
Right, no mention of a car stove. Now, do we infer that Ram does not think that gaining the attitude of gratitude, of being a grateful person, is important? What do you say? Do you think he doesn't embrace that idea?
No, he does, because he's saying that when we show like the respect towards our parents, our creator, we're using them as, like you said, the vehicle to, you know, to connect with our ultimate creator.
Yeah, but so far as the idea of imbuing an attitude of gratitude, of being grateful for people that do good to you, the Ram makes no mention of that. Do you think he doesn't think that's a good idea? What do you think? Is he denying that there's a ideal or a value of gratefulness?
I feel like in a way he doesn't mention it, because I feel like maybe he feels like we should already have that instilled within us.
Yeah, that, in other words, exactly. In other words, that is a general principle which is not necessarily animating Kibbutz Avim. You know what I'm saying? It's not about, in other words, that's not, in other words, yes, when you give your parent the Diet Coke, it could be for the idea of seeing the Creator, connecting to the Creator, and it might be also gratitude as well, but that's not the essential reason why the mitzvah is present. The mitzvah of gratefulness is something which is even more prior to that, which ultimately comes down to a concept of justice. In other words, giving each person their due. Okay? More primary idea, as Eric was bringing up. Okay. Let's get down to the brass tacks. Gotta give it. How does a child implement kibbutz, showing honor? And how do they implement Yira? Give me some of the key features.
By listening to them?
What is Yira? What is the reverence? And what is the honor? I'll flash it back on the screen here. Which one? I'll start with it. Which one is Yira? How do you show Yira, reverence? halachically, what do you do? How do you do the mitzvah? Let's go.
By listening to him and doing his...
him like a king, not sitting in his seat, not standing where he would stand, and not contradicting him.
Right. And not calling by his first name.
Right.
In other words, relating to him as a superior. Now, by the way, that does not mean that he is a superior. Just because the parent doesn't mean the child is less right or more right. You know what I'm saying? It's got nothing to do with that. It's showing, we're going to get to this, you are showing a reverence to him as a parent. We're going to get to, I'm going to give you a strategy to be able to pull this off. Next, what is honor? How do you show honor to parent, mom and dad?
By not questioning them?
No. Nope.
Like,
no, that's the yira component. That's showing reverence. How do you show honor? You function as what?
Serve them.
Serve them. Basically, you're a butler.
Attend to their needs.
You attend to their needs. They want a Diet Coke, give them a Diet Coke. They do. Can you take out the garbage? You take out the garbage. You bring the groceries in? You bring the groceries in. Can you get this from the store? Get this from the store. Right? Basically, you are their attendant. Okay? Service activities. All right, now, do you have to spend any money on that? Let's say he says like this, I want you to go to the restaurant and pick me up a sandwich. Do you have to go and do that? They ask you to go get you a sandwich at the deli. You have to get him a sandwich at the deli.
Yeah.
Yes. Which credit card? His or yours?
Yours.
If he doesn't say anything, yours.
His.
His?
From their resources. Very important. Now, if he's poor, then you got to give him, then you got to sustain him, obviously. He gets first dibs on the tzedakah. But if they ask you to get you something, again, this is all technically, they have to pay for it. All right? Okay, here we go. This is the shocking question of the night. Is an adopted parent obligated to keep it of him? Why or why not?
Yes, because they're the ones, you know, caring for the child, teaching them. Helping them.
Okay, so Scott says yes. Shmuel, what do you say?
Yeah, I would strongly agree. It seems that there are two fundamental parts to this. The part where the parent creates you and brings you into the world, and the part where the parent helps you how to learn how to function in the world and okay. And show you love and consideration. And that's what the adoptive parents are doing for you.
Okay. Suzanne, what do you say? Obligated or not obligated?
I think they are. I'll go with they are.
They are. So far, it's three yeses. Erica, are you obligated to show honor and reverence to your adopted parents?
Yes.
Yes. Shana, what do you say?
I think Sefer HaChinuch says yes, and the Rambam says no.
Okay. Julie.
I'm sorry, can you just repeat the question?
Is there an obligation of showing honor and reverence to your adopted parents? Yes or no?
I would say yes, but I mean, it seems like there's a lot of leeway there.
Political answer there, Julie. Well said. Okay, here's the answer. No! They're not your parents! They're not your parents. Now, so from a technical standpoint, the mitzvah kibbutz applies to your parents. They're not your parents. Just because you call them mommy and daddy, they're not your parents. But, here's a big but, comma, from the general principle in Judaism of showing gratitude, you're going to be respectful to them. You're going to treat them as if they're parents. But it's not coming from the halachic source of honoring your parents. It's coming from the general idea of being grateful and gracious for those who do good to you. You know what I'm saying? So it might look the same, but it's coming from a different source. Do Do you understand that point? The question comes in, I've dealt with it at MG many times. I'll throw out another question to you. Adopted parent dies. Does the child, does the person sit Shiva? What says you, Shmuel?
I'm not sure.
Are they Jewish?
I'm not sure, given the answer that you just gave for the last question.
Come on, let's go. Jewish? What's going on? Yes or no? You sit Shiva, yes or no? Adopted parent dies.
Are they Jewish, though?
Oh, yeah, they're Jewish. Okay, fine. Okay. Jewish. Yes. Your Jewish adopted parent dies. Do you sit Shiva?
Yes.
What do you say, Suzanne?
No.
No. Erica, what says you?
Yes.
Yes. Sina, what says you?
No.
Julie, what says you?
It depends.
What is a political question? It depends on what?
If you adopt a child, you take on their name. So, and, but it, I, there's a lot of, it's subjective, I guess. I'm not sure. I'm not comfortable saying yes or no.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to force any more than I did. Okay, Scott, sit Shiva, yes or no?
I'm going to say, you're going to say no, but I feel like you should say yes. I would. I feel like I would want to.
Okay. So Scott, you're right. I am going to say no. You are not obligated to sit Shiva because they're not your relative. However, comma, you can, on your own, take on acts of mourning and showing reverence. You're not forbidden. You can say kaddish for them. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with sitting on a low stool. You want to wear, you know, I mean, you know, you would not be allowed to tear kriya, by the way. You would not be allowed to do that. Why not? You would not be allowed to tear kriya. Why not?
They're not one of the seven people that you are commanded to.
Okay, and so what? But you want to. You want to rip your shirt. Because ripping your shirt is bal tachlis. You're not allowed to waste unnecessarily. You can't just take a shirt and rip it to pieces, right? But so when I have a mitzvah of kriya of tearing the shirt, showing the mourning, the mitzvah gives it a purpose. But I'm not obligated in the kriya, so I don't have a right to rip my shirt
all over.
There he is.
Sorry about that. Okay, I'm back. So you would not be able to tear Korea. Okay. Now, okay, question 17. Do we still see it? Let me just fix it and put it back on.
No, I can't see it anymore.
No.
I can see it.
You see it now?
Mm-hmm.
Question 17. What challenges would an adopted child have in fulfilling his obligation to their birth parents? Their birth parents, like AJ's dad who shows up.
Different customs and...
No. AJ's a 35-year-old doctor. He doesn't know his biological father. Biological father shows up, knocks on his door. Now there's a mitzvah of kibbutz aventim because he's his biological parent. What challenges would you have to do this mitzvah to the guy?
He doesn't know him. He doesn't. It's kind of hard for him to show reverence for somebody who just showed up on his doorstep. Like,
is it, okay, that's one problem. What other problem is there?
You don't see the biological parent as your parent because they didn't raise you. You've had no exposure to them. You have never seen them since the day you were born. So emotionally, they're not your parent.
Emotionally, not your parent, but it's worse than that.
You don't feel any gratitude towards them.
It's worse than that.
You resent them for giving you up?
They rejected you. If I was so important, why didn't you keep me? So a parent, that's why it's so shocking to the child. The guy walks in after 35 years. Hello, how are you? What do you mean, hello, all right? Where the hell were you? There's a lot of anger there. Okay? So to do keep it up and to such a person who you, by definition, hate their guts or have a lot of aggression toward is nearly a very difficult job, maybe impossible. Yes or no, guys?
It's definitely hard, yeah.
Very hard. Now, let's move it a little easier. Let's turn the dog, let me turn the knob a little down, okay? What are these challenges of adopted child do we all have with our parents, and why? Now we're making it more spicy. What challenges do we have that the adopted parent has with their biological parent who shows up late in the day? We all have this challenge. What is the challenge?
Sometimes they might, it's kind of like if you're upset with them to show reverence.
Has anybody here been upset with their parents?
No, never.
Yes. Have you ever felt that they have not treated you properly?
Yeah.
Yes. So the relationship of a parent, a child of it, is by definition what they call love-hate. Sometimes more love. Sometimes more hate. And if you're treating the myth of Kibab M as a function of in response to gratitude, well, quite frankly, you're not feeling it, right? So here's my question. So how do we pull this off? I got 4 minutes left on the clock here. I'm going to give you the secret to pulling off Kibab M. 90 seconds. Kibab M. I'll put it down to a bumper sticker. Kibab M, it's not personal. I'll explain. When you show love, when you show honor or reverence to your parents, you're not showing honor and reverence to them as individual personalities or to them and their particular track record. You're showing honor and reverence to the office of the parent. Last Tuesday night, there was a State of the Union address by President Donald J. Trump. Half the room stood up and enthusiastically clapped the Republicans. And on the Democrat side were a bunch of sullen, dejected, hostile Democrats. But when he walked in, what did they all stand up? Yes or no?
Yes.
Republican now was, we all know that Nancy Pelosi does not love Donald Trump. She tried to literally get rid of him. Unsuccessfully. Why did she stand up? She hates his guts. She thinks he's a criminal.
It's respect for the president.
Honoring the rule of the president, regardless of who it is.
Exactly. She's standing up, not for him as an individual, who she hates in a way that there's no words I can express, right? She's standing up for the office of the president. When we get the Diet Coke for mom and dad, whether you are feeling warm and cozy with them, or you have a whole list of issues with them, you're not giving it to them as an individual. They are the representative of the parent, the office of the parent, who reflects the creator of the universe. They are there as a tool of education for you. That's why the Torah granted them these rights of honor. It's not personal. Because otherwise, you should say a simple point. Why isn't Kibud Av based on merit? A merit-based Kibud Av. You do good, you're a good parent, you get the honor. You're a lousy parent, you get nothing. But no, Because nothing to do with merit. It has to do with what they reflect. They're a mirror to the creator. And therefore, we stand up for the office of the parent. I'm getting a head shake from Shmuel. Rebuttal. Yeah, Shmuel.
I just think there's a serious hole in that argument.
What's the hole?
What if Donald Trump was in fact a criminal? You know, if he was the president of the United States, but was engaging in actual criminal activity, you would then, and it's irrelevant if he's convicted of anything or not. And this is not a political example in any way.
So again,
would you still expect everybody to stand up for him?
So in America, you're assumed guilty until proven, you're assumed innocent until proven guilty. So he's technically an innocent person, and that's that. So you have to stand up for him.
I think it's fair to say that not all guilty people are convicted. And again, this is not political. I don't give a care about Donald Trump.
No, I understand that. So, but the reason that Nancy Pelosi, who feels like you do, he is a criminal, stood up and even extended her hand to shake it, because she recognizes that we are the United States.
I think my argument is, irregardless of whether this person in the office is convicted of something or not, but it is understood that they are a criminal and engaging in criminal activity. Do we still expect everybody in Congress to stand up and clap for them?
Well, so the Democrats did not stand up and clap; they just stood up.
Right. Okay.
There was no clapping. Zero clapping.
Right. So they're children. What do you want?
Well, okay. But they're like us with our parents. They did the legal minimum requirement.
Okay, so let's change this a little bit into, you know that your parents are criminal and they're engaging in criminal activity.
Right, so
in a position to bring them to court.
Okay.
Stand up for them and show them respect.
Right, so I mentioned to you earlier that is a debate in halacha, that if the person is defined as a rasha, a wicked person, a criminal, a wicked person, then they're not eligible for honor.
Who makes that decision?
Like in anything, in any legal system, it has certain legal criteria. But let's deal with not, let's leave the extreme case. Let's just assume a person has annoying parents, or just parents who have good intentions, but are just not good at being parents. Okay, let's just leave that case, right? They're not criminal. They're just not good. They're not effective. They're just, you know what I mean? Now, I'm not talking about the parents who are easy to do keep it up and for, the parents who are thoughtful and helpful and provide a great education and are always there for the kids. I'm not talking about the best case. I'm dealing with the case where it's not great. They still brought you into this world, and therefore they still relate you to the Creator. That they could, regardless of their execution of their duties, they still reflect that. And that, because of that, and according to the Rambam, and only because of that, not because of a car to tow, is there an institution of Kibbutz Aben. It's simply for your benefit to recognize God as a Creator. That's it. So therefore, according to Rambam, even if you're a product of an adulterous relationship, you still have to do the service activity. Now, why I said before, as a tool of effectiveness, the more you relate to it emotionally, the more difficult it gets. In other words, because then it becomes quid pro quo. Well, I see. How were they good to me this week? I'm not getting the Diet Coke. I'm not getting the Coke. You get off the cookies, right? You may want to say that. But if it's really nothing to do with them personally because of their office, I'm relating to the, and really the benefit of having the office of the parent is there to help me, then I'll get up for the call. Because it's not about them being a good parent or being a mediocre parent or being a fantastic parent. It's irrelevant. It's got nothing to do with their behavior, per se. Now, I will leave you, we're late. I'll leave you one last question. How then, as a parent, would you help make the mitzvah easier on your own children? How would you make the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim easier for your kid?
Trying to be like a good, decent parent?
One, step one, be a good parent. Okay. Step two, very important. I'll leave you a little nugget. In other words, just because the parent has the right doesn't mean they have to use the right. So if I see my kid, he came back from a basketball game, he lost. He's grumpy. He's scowling. I know that he's not really in a great position to do us any kind of, you know, take out the garbage, bring in the groceries, set the table, wash the dishes. He's not really in that good place. So as a thoughtful parent, I'm not going to give him an obligation that he really can't do. So I'm not going to ask him. You know, I'm not going to obligate him in something that he can't pull off. The parent has to recognize the sensitivity to where their kid's at. Okay, there is a lot to talk about. This is a juicy topic. My goal is just to open the topic, stir the challah, have a couple conversations, and then wish you all a good night.
Thank you.
If you want to talk more, you can send me emails. We can, you know, WhatsApp. I'm the quickest on the WhatsApp. It's still WhatsApp on. If you want a good question, WhatsApp me, and I'll do my best to get back to you. Big topic, juicy topic, lots to discuss, lots to think about. Have a great night.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.